This hearing of the Senate Community and Regional Affairs Committee will now come to order. It is 1:41 p.m. Thursday, March 16th, 2023 in Belts 105. Members present are Senator Gray Jackson, Senator Olson, Senator Giesel, Senator Bjorkman, and myself, Chair Dunbar. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Please take this time to silence your cell phones for the duration of the meeting. Before we begin, I would like to thank Juliana Singh, the Senate Community and Regional Affairs Recording Secretary, and Jake Ward, is that right? I'm sorry, I can't. Wade, I'm sorry, I did the writing here. Jake Wade from the Juneau LIO for staffing the committee today. Thank you, Mr. Wade. We have two items of business on our agenda today. First, an introductory hearing on SB 77, municipal property tax exemption and tax on blighted property by myself, Senator Dunbar. And second, a presentation on housing in the housing by the Housing Alaskans, a public-private partnership. There we go. Okay, do any committee members have any questions before we begin? All right, so for our first order of business, we are going to have an introductory hearing on SB 77, municipal property tax exemption, tax on blighted property. I will give a quick introduction of the bill, and then my staffer, Aliana Salinguit, will go over the sectional. We will then hear from invited testimony, move on to committee discussion, and then have public testimony. We have the following individuals for invited testimony. Mike Robbins, the Executive Director of the Anchorage Community Development Authority, Bill Popp, the President and CEO of the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation, and Nils Andreessen, Executive Director of the Alaska Municipal League. We will also have the following individuals available for questions. Sandra Moeller, the Director of the Division of Community and Regional Affairs, Joe Casey, the State Assessor, Division of Community and Regional Affairs, and Elwin Blackwell, the School Finance Manager, the Department of Education and Early Development. All right, so very briefly, if folks would like to turn to SB 77. SB 77 gives local governments two optional tools to incentivize economic development, particularly residential and commercial housing developments. The first tool provides a full property tax abatement. Currently, local governments can only exempt the amount above the local school requirement. SB 77 will remove this limit, allowing for a full property tax abatement. Importantly, though, it does not impact the required contribution for schools. Schools will still need to be funded by local governments, who will need to find other means to find that funding. And while this might cause a short-term increase in some other property taxes, over the long term, it increases the property tax base. And so in Anchorage, for example, we use a downtown property tax development, property tax abatement that lasts about 12 years. The second tool gives local governments the option to adopt an ordinance for implementing a blight tax. Blighted properties can reduce property tax collection by decreasing the value of surrounding properties. They also, I think, as many people in here know, provide a public safety risk. They often become centers of criminal activity, unfortunately. A blight tax increases the property tax on blighted property until the property has been remediated, thus incentivizing owners to remediate their properties. And so I'd like to reiterate that neither of these tools are imposed on localities. It's changing state law to allow local governments to use these tools if they so choose. And in both cases, they would have to adopt their own local ordinances before they did so. Particularly in the blighted property case, they must set out a framework for what it means to be a blighted property. And so with that, I will ask my staffer, Aliana Salanguit, to come forward and go through a brief sectional.
For the record, Aliana Salinguit, staff to Senator Dunbar. Sectional Section 1 amends AS 2945050 subsection M, optional exemptions and exclusions. This will allow for full property tax exemptions for economic development properties. Current language, again, only allows for the property value above the required local contribution to be exempted, and Section 1 will remove this limit. It does not remove municipalities' obligation to fund the required local contribution. Section 2 adds a new section, AS 2945057, levy of tax on blighted property. This is the part that allows municipalities to adopt an ordinance establishing standards and regulations for implementing a blight tax. The ordinance must include standards and a procedure for determining if a property is blighted. I'd like to know that primary residences are exempted from being designated as blighted. And then we have to include a tax rate for blighted properties, a process for notifying the owner of a blighted property and allowing them an opportunity to appeal, standards for remediating or redeveloping the property so the blighted designation could be removed, and a duration of time and reduced tax rate for the remediated property. Excuse me. To qualify for the reduced tax rate, the property owner must do three things. One, submit to their municipality a plan to remediate or redevelop the property. Two, have the remediation / redevelopment plan approved by the municipality. And three, fulfill the terms. Section 2 will also allow municipalities to designate revenue from the blight tax to be used for redevelopment purposes. The language in Section 1 and 2, again, allowing for full property tax exemption and implementation of the blight tax, both use may instead of shall, so it is an option and not required. And Section 3 provides for an immediate effective date after enactment of the bill.
Thank you, Ms. Salangit. At this point, before we go on to invited testimony, is there any question from my colleagues yet? Ms. Gray-Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chairman, not a question, but just for clarity purposes, for me and probably anybody listening. So currently, the exemption is for service areas only, correct?
But I'm sorry, Senator, what do you mean by service areas only?
Okay, so in Anchorage, okay, my understanding is that the exemption is for taxes, all the taxes other than the ASD mill levy, the ASD tax. Correct?
Right.
So if I can follow up.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So then currently they pay taxes on the other service areas, like police, fire, you know what I'm saying? Okay. All right. I just wanted for clarity. But this bill will exempt them from all service areas in addition to the school district mill levy.
Yes. Thank you, Senator. If the locality decides to do that, they'll have the ability to.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Exactly. Thank you, Senator Gray-Jackson. At this point, we will now hear invited testimony. And first we have, double check that they are on the line. Yes, we have Mike Robbins, Executive Director of the Anchorage Community Development Authority. Mr. Robbins, would you please put yourself on the record and begin your testimony?
Yes, thank you. For the record, my name is Mike Robbins. I'm the Executive Director of the Anchorage Community Development Corporation. And I'm pleased to be here today to speak on behalf of the support of SB 77. This bill, should it pass, will stimulate economic and housing development around the state. Alaska has, as many places around the country, suffering from a pretty serious housing shortage at all levels. And while multiple factors do contribute to this environment, which we cannot affect, there are some that we can and should work to solve. And that's why SB 77 is important. One of the biggest challenges that face our builders is the cost and the gap between the cost and the expected returns when they build multifamily housing. SB 77 will give additional tools and provide local control to our cities to help bridge that gap by allowing our cities to offer a full tax abatement should they choose to do so. The law, if I may note, already allows for the 100% abatement for deteriorated property. And it would seem equitable if our cities were that our cities would be able to offer the same incentive for new development as we do for redevelopment. SB 77 also brings forward another much needed tool for our cities that they'll be able to use to protect property values, clean up our neighborhoods, and encourage the redevelopment of blighted properties across the communities. The blighted property section of the bill, again, gives our cities the opportunity, should they choose to enact an incentive through taxing blighted properties to encourage development for their neighborhoods. This bill, should it pass, appears to have no financial consequences for the state budget and should not negatively affect education. In fact, eventually will increase the amount of money available for education funding as we increase property taxes through development. It's also a multiple win for multiple sectors of the economy, including jobs, housing, tax creation, construction, and allowing our young people to be able to afford housing here in Alaska, which is one way that we can keep from losing population as we have been the last several years. And I believe that's all I have to say today, and I'm willing to take any questions if there are any.
Thank you, Director Robbins. I don't see any questions, but if you don't mind staying on the line, we will perhaps come back to you.
No problem.
Next we have, double check, yes. Next we have Bill Popp, President and CEO of the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation. Mr. Popp, would you please put yourself on the record and begin your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bill Popp. I'm President and CEO of the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation. I'd like to add some additional comments to the very succinct and to-the-point comments provided by Mike Robbins in the fact that I believe that SB 77, if adopted, would provide the municipality of Anchorage as well as other communities across the state the ability to develop strategic initiatives using this tool as a component of attracting new investment from outside of Alaska through housing development, because workforce is a major driver for the decision-making process of businesses looking to make investments anywhere in the United States at this point in time. Data shows us that one of the top five decision-making categories for businesses choosing a location to make an investment in, whether it is locally or nationally, is focused on the stability and availability of workforce. We are reaching a demographic tipping point where population trends in the coming decades are demonstrating a decline in available workforce, and this is going to become a critical issue for businesses across the United States as they seek new opportunities to invest. Housing will be a key piece in attracting and retaining workforce, and I believe that this could be a very important tool toward multifamily development in the vertical mode in particular, given Anchorage's diminishing availability of available buildable land that does not require significant costs related to redevelopment, which is another strategy that we'll have to address in the future and that this tool may also be helpful in. When we look at the overall picture of the tools available in the toolbox, this is an important addition to Anchorage and to the communities across the state's abilities to develop strategies that are targeted for their particular community goals and outcomes. And it is our hope as the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation that this legislation will be viewed favorably by the legislature and the governor and passed into law so that then the communities can get to work in developing their variations of this new legislation and this new toolbox that would be provided. I'd be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Popp. Any questions for President Popp? Okay, not seeing anything. So next we will go, actually we'll take a very brief at ease and back on the record. Next we have Niels Andreessen, the Executive Director of the Alaska Municipal League. Mr. Andreessen, would you please let us know your perspective?
Thank you to the committee. Niels Andreessen, I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Municipal League, for the record, really just want to add on to the previous speakers. Mr. Popp, you stole my tools in the toolbox approach, but fundamentally this bill is a tools in the toolbox bill. It gives local governments the ability to do good things in their communities related to community and economic development. AML is supportive of both aspects of the bill, both the abatement, which we recognize does increase property values over time with that increased early investment, and then secondly to the blighted properties incentive program. Just to speak more concretely to the blighted properties portion, we know that blighted properties reduce property tax collections by devaluing neighboring properties. Really, this should or could be thought more of as a community redevelopment tax incentive program, but blighted blight tax is the shorthand for that. It's not currently an option for municipalities in Alaska, with no provision in statute to allow it. So the goal of this legislation is to allow municipalities to levy this additional property tax on blighted properties. Enacting tax incentives to remediate properties can help communities by encouraging property owners to redevelop their properties or sell them to new owners who will do so. Remediation and redevelopment of blighted properties allows properties that are vacant or underutilized to be used for more productive purposes and ultimately increases the value of the property and surrounding properties with positive effects that reverberate throughout the community. AML is supportive of this bill as currently drafted and looks forward to contributing our perspective throughout the legislative process. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Andreessen. Are there any questions? Yes, Vice Chair Olson.
Mr. Andreessen, since you represent or is the with the Municipal League and have contacts throughout the state of Alaska, how much effect is this going to have in other places besides in downtown Anchorage or other places in Anchorage that are show signs of being run down? Do you have any idea?
Sure, it's a good question, Vice Chair Olson, through the chair. I think this really is, this bill is focused on those communities with a property tax. So it's self-limiting to some extent because the majority of local governments have a sales tax instead. So for those who have a property tax, they'll be able to use this. It is your more populous communities in the state who have that as their revenue base. So it could impact or have a positive benefit for the majority of Alaskans in some way. But in terms of total number of communities, it's a smaller footprint.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
So you're mainly talking about first-class cities. Is that correct?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Olson. It would be, it's not necessarily attributable to class, but yeah, home rule and first class and unified would be the main ones who have a property tax. I can't think of second class ones that do.
No further questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. Andreessen. Any other questions? I'm not seeing any. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Can I add something?
Yeah, of course. There?
Second class boroughs also have a property tax. Second class cities wouldn't have a property tax. Sorry for clarification.
Excellent. Very thorough. Appreciate it. Okay. All right. Seeing no questions, no further questions, we'll now move on to public testimony. Public testimony will be limited to 2 minutes. We will begin with individuals in the room. If there's anyone here who'd like to testify, please come forward. Oh, wait, I need to. Public testimony is now open. Would anyone like to come forward and testify? I'm not seeing anyone. I'm not seeing anyone in the room. And I think everyone online is an invited testifier. Oh, wait. Is Mr. Schutte, is he for public testimony? Okay. Chris, are you there?
Yes.
Oh, all right. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's a little bit of an echo in the LIO in Anchorage, so if I misspeak, please, it's because it's so weird, the acoustics here. Good afternoon. My name is Chris Schutte. I am a private economic and development consultant based here in Anchorage. I am here today to testify in favor of Senate Bill 77, which, if passed, will make critical statutory changes that power local jurisdictions to encourage new jobs, new local taxes, and long-term economic benefits for their communities. In my previous life, I served as the Director of Economic and Community Development for the Municipality of Anchorage, and I worked closely with other economic development professionals from across the state on both of the subjects that are addressed by this bill: property tax abatement tools that create incentives, and property tax that deals with blighted properties. I am extremely supportive of both statutory changes as proposed in SB 77, but I'm going to focus my testimony today on the tax abatement changes proposed to AS 2945050 Section M. Prior to 2017, property tax abatement tools for encouraging economic or community development across the state were very limited and were rarely used. There were efforts in 2016 and 2017 that I participated in with many others across the state that incrementally improved that scenario and changed the law. Unfortunately, those changes and where we're at today don't fully attain the goals that were envisioned in those efforts. Namely, there are the limitations on the amount of property taxes that can be abated when trying to encourage or incentivize certain types of development. Here in Anchorage, for example, following the passage of those previous changes, we implemented local codes that incentivize downtown housing, that incentivize low-income and workforce affordable housing, and that incentivize development along our critical transportation corridors or transit corridors. However, we've come to learn that because of the limitations on the ability to fully abate those taxes, projects are becoming increasingly uneconomic, especially in our community. This is an inconsistency in state law. We look at some of the other types of property tax abatement tools that do exist. The most common comparison is to the deteriorated property tax abatement tool authorized in AS 29040.
Mr. Schutte, I'm sorry, that is time. Maybe you want to wrap up really quickly?
Yeah, just in conclusion, thank you for fixing these inconsistencies. SB 77 is the right tool to do that, to encourage incentivized development in an increasingly expensive environment. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Schutte, and thank you to your long service to the municipality of Anchorage. Is there anyone else? I'm not seeing anyone else online. Okay. All right. So with that, I will close public hearing, and we will set this bill aside for a future hearing, a future date. With that, I'm going to take a brief at ease, and so that we can change presenters. By Housing Alaskans, a public-private partnership. In the room presenting, we have Preston Simmons, chair. Online, we also have, let's see here, Michelle Bowles, for the senior associate from Agnew Beck Consulting. In the interest of time, well, actually, would you prefer people wait till the end or ask questions during the presentation?
Probably to the end.
Okay, we will do that. All right, so if you don't mind putting yourself on the record and going through your presentation.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Preston Simmons, chair of the Housing Alaskans, a public-private partnership, and I'll refer to it as HAP after this. And just want to thank Senator Dunbar and the other members of the Senate Community and Regional Affairs Committee for inviting this presentation today. Next slide, please. The HAP was formed in 2022 with funding from the state of Alaska and a small grant from the Rasmussen Foundation. It functions as a housing trust, and we were one of three states in the union that did not have a housing trust. So we now have one that can bring other resources to bear to create housing. And that was a great primer prior to this in terms of some of the issues that we're dealing with as a state. It does not compete with the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation or the other 14 regional housing authorities. It's meant to work hand in glove, and it really leverages and combines various funding streams in order to make it easier for housing projects to develop adequate capital. Many projects are very complicated, often having dozens of different sources of funding, and sometimes just need a little bit to get over the hump to be able to go forward. It's governed by a board of directors throughout of Alaska, and half of those members are from rural communities and Alaska Native. And I believe you have a handout also that has the board members on there. We are literally two meetings into it, so in the process of doing the structural components, the bylaws, and so forth, and really setting our strategic plan. We have a goal to do at least one project this year. We also have invitations out for an expert advisory council that'll be comprised of experts throughout the state that'll make recommendations of which projects to move forward for the board. So what is a housing trust? It's used in 48 states and many municipalities to create housing. It's really considered a best practice and is a backbone of a comprehensive housing development strategy. It also complements existing housing entities, and it leverages federal, state, municipal resources, and also philanthropic contributions. So we have formed a committee also to go after private grants and philanthropy. And it incentivizes housing developers and providers with operational capital funding to help projects go across the line. So our administrator for this is the Alaska Community Foundation, which is a well-trusted source, and they'll be very involved in all the decisions in terms of where the money goes out to as well. As noted, we're in the process of designing our programmatic and strategic focus, and also how the trust will be funded. So we'll be looking for an initial bolus investment by the state and the federal government, as well as ongoing methods to have sustainable funding, which is very important for a trust to be successful. So as you heard, Alaska has a housing affordability problem. And this is everyday working Alaskans that are working full-time aren't able to afford housing in our state. We also have a development problem. Construction isn't keeping up demand across large and small communities, especially for multifamily housing. And new development doesn't pencil at market affordable rates. And I'll go into that later in the presentation. We also have a very aging housing stock. Over half the estimated need for housing over the next 10 years is around rehab existing housing. A lot of our housing was built in the 70s and 80s, and so is reaching 40 to 50 years of age. And the problem is only going to get worse. So Alaska's minimum wage is $10.85, and the wage needed to afford a one-bedroom unit is $18.66. And this next slide is pretty interesting. This actually shows a breakdown, and this is Alaska-based data. It shows the wages needed to afford a one-bedroom or two-bedroom, and then the type of workers within the state. So the vertical lines, the first one is the one-bedroom, and the second line is the two-bedroom. So you can see many of our frontline workers within the state cannot afford housing, and it really, even at a two-worker, two-worker level. So why do we look at housing needs by income? It's a way of understanding the type of housing that needs to be built. This is broken down to less than 80% of AMI, kind of middle income from 80 to 100, and higher income at over 120%. There's actually more resources available through grants and federal help in that less than 80% AMI. And in the upper end, often some of the tax incentives that we were just talking about will help definitely for the higher income housing. Where we don't have a lot of programmatic in this state help and is really needed is in that middle income households. And we'll talk about that's where the average income is from $64,000 to $96,000. And there's no federal state subsidy, and it really is going to require public input. And that's an area we may put more emphasis on initially, really to recruit those families into the state and retain our families. So this gives you an example of who we're talking about. So on the left side, minimum wage might be a single parent working as a waiter or a hairdresser, and they can afford up to $580 a month. At 80% AMI, that's $1,600 a month. Either a commercial driver is a single worker or a personal care assistant, a mail clerk. 120% might be up to $2,400. So a double income household, medical assistant, construction worker, or marketing manager, and so on. What's interesting in this slide, which kind of surprised me when I saw it, is the size of our middle income households in this state. I would have expected that to be a lot larger. The other interesting fact is that Agnew Beck put together for a multi-unit kind of apartment building, it would take an average rent of about $2,300 a month for that project to pencil. And if you look at that, that's right up against the 120 AMI mark. So any project that is built without a subsidy basically will is not affordable for a majority of our workers in the state. So just to reemphasize the point, everyday working Alaskans, from cook to cleaners to mail clerks, are struggling to afford housing in our state. So it's a large problem, and we need to start on this quickly. So we need an estimated 27,500 housing units over the next 10 years across the income spectrum. And that's really broken down almost 50-50 into half of these are existing units that need replacement or renovation due to the condition of the housing, and the other are new units that are needed due to population growth or severe undercrowding. In many of our rural communities, houses have extreme overcrowding. This is how it breaks down as examples across the state. It is not an Anchorage issue. It's all over our state. And I can give a personal example from Providence. We had recruited in last year 9 nurses into the Kodiak community that we could not find housing for, and so we weren't able to land them in this state. And that's a critical workforce. I mean, that's just one example. There's like examples across every industry in our state. So a breakdown of total units new and rehab needed by income. So about 48% is in that less than 80% of AMI, 21% is at the middle income group, and 31% is in the upper income. And you might note, why would we want to invest in support upper income housing? Well, 30% of an individual's basically income, if you go over that, you become rent burdened. So on the upper end in our state, because there is not enough housing to move into as people's career progress, they're actually underpaying as a proportion of what their income should be. So if we get more housing, with people moving into more expensive housing, it will also free up the middle income, low income. So we really need to think about how the flow within the state works as well.
So, Mr. Simmons, I know I said it, we would wait till the end. This has been a pretty long presentation so far, but there's 5 left. So you're through Unalakleet, you're headed towards Nome. But I want to take a pause here and ask if any of my colleagues had any questions so far. Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I mean, Mr. Chair, thank you so much for this presentation, because, you know, for years we talk about housing shortage. And I'm really, really thrilled to see, number one, Senate Bill 77 coming forward, in addition to this new trust. And I appreciate it. My question is, these incentivized housing developers and providers with operational capital funding, is this funding going to be grants or loans?
Through the chair to Senator Gray Jackson, it will be developing those policies and procedures. It could be both. Housing trusts across the country use a variety of tools, from direct grants to lower interest loans to working on policies and procedures. So there's a variety of methods. And we'll want to, based on the experts in our advisory council, we'll choose which kind of tools will kind of move us the furthest, the fastest. And I don't think it'll be any one thing.
May I follow up, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So how many are on the board?
There are, I give you the list. The board is 12 members of the board, and they represent throughout the state of Alaska. And there will be a handout that's available that has the board members on there. But they're leaders of Alaska Native corporations and developers and so forth. So it's a broad spectrum. We want to make sure everybody was represented.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Gray Jackson. Great questions. Any other questions? Not seeing any. All right, Mr. Simmons, take us home.
Okay. Well, I'll be quick here and finish off. So why isn't development keeping up with demand? So I talked about the aging housing stock, and due to the cost of housing and projects not pencil, there's been a precipitous drop off in the last few years in terms of housing permits across the state. not just because of the cost and it's not a good place to invest. So the types of initiatives that we just heard about in terms of tax advantage, how we do revenue sources to help support these are going to be really important. What drives the housing development costs in our state? Well, about 75% or three quarters of it are the hard costs, materials, systems, labor. Then we have our financing, operating, land acquisition, and so forth. So as we've been going through, we met with the Economic Development Council, John Springsteen. We met with the governor. We've met with 15 senators and representatives so far over the last few weeks. And a lot of really good ideas coming out for how we could lower costs. Everything, there's a lumber bill that's in play that would potentially lower the costs of the actual hard cost building materials. How do we get materials up here more cheaply through logistics? A lot are in transportation costs. You know, how do we bulk purchase? Just a lot of really neat ideas coming out. Those are things we can help facilitate as well. Hard costs in Anchorage, this is, and Bethel is a couple examples here of where we are versus the lower 48. I won't go into the details of this slide other than to say that our costs are generally anywhere from a quarter to 50% or higher in terms of lower cost than others that where it's more affordable to build. And the gap between development costs and rents, I talked about this earlier, but development costs run about $2,000 to $3,000 per unit in this state, and the median rents, these are market rates across. So in Bethel is an example, in Anchorage and statewide. So that's the gap that we need to address in the state. So in summary, just want to say affordable housing across the income spectrum is key to a healthy and vibrant Alaska. HAP is here to work alongside others to make a difference in this area. Thank you for your previous and ongoing support, and we look forward to working in partnership to address the challenges and opportunities ahead of us in Alaska. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Simmons. Any questions? Senator Giesel.
I'm not so sure it's a question so much as a comment, Mr. Chair. Mr. Simmons, this looks like a great idea, a good organization that's really going to make a positive impact. You know, I agree with you that the cost of building materials and so forth is a deterrent to building new housing, but our economic instability and political instability is also a factor. I'm a lifelong Alaskan. I was here in 1986. Yeah, we were having a boom. People were building all over the place, and then oil crashed. And people threw the keys in the door and walked away from their mortgages, and we had lots of empty buildings. My husband and I held on, but this is a kind of economy Alaska has, which also contributes to this. But I applaud the efforts of this group. I'm looking forward to seeing your impact. I expect it will be significant. Thank you.
Through the chair to Senator Giesel, thank you very much. Appreciate it. And it's all by working together that we'll get this solved.
Mr. Simmons, can you talk a little bit about funding for the housing trust and sort of how much funding exists in the trust, how much might be needed to make it sustainable, sure. That kind of thing?
Senator Dunbar, so we received an appropriation in the 2022 legislature of $1 million and then a small grant. We did a ask of the governor for $50 million, and then we'll do a like ask to the federal government. And the idea is to spend those dollars on projects as quickly as possible. The other aspect that's needed is a sustainable funding source. So we need to think through ideas like that. In some states, as we've started to look at resources on this, for example, in a lot of our more tourist communities, a lot of affordable housing inventory is getting turned over to short-term rentals. Mm-hmm. And I know that personal fact from Kodiak, Seward, and Valdez, where we're recruiting. So there's often a fee that can come or a tax imposed on that, which would be paid for outside of Alaska, so and then could be used to supplement in those areas as a potential idea for funding sources. But there's many others. So, but it's important to have a sustainable funding source that isn't, as appropriations change from year to year, that struggle. This is a problem that's going to be with us for multiple years. And if we think about the infrastructure bill and the Willow Project and other economic development and the tourism increase in this state, we need housing for those folks. And so it's going to be a multi-year project and in our rural communities where we have the rehab that's needed on, in the facilities there as well.
Thank you. Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm what I'm about to say is based on my experience in Anchorage and serving on the assembly and community. But Anchorage in itself is a little more than 1,900 square miles, and most of it's trees. And I'm sure that you're going to have a plan in place, or at least work on a plan, to address folks in the community who are adamant about not cutting down trees, because I know that you're going to have to do some of that in order to build. So I think it's important to keep in mind and maybe plan a little bit ahead if possible. I know the organization is really new, and I'm sure you have a plan in place for a lot of things, but I think this is one that maybe you could plan ahead a little bit. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Through the chair to Senator Gray Jackson, thank you for that. And we heard Bill Pop, you know, ideas of maybe building a little more vertical as well to do that, so you'd have some higher density. That may be help as well, but I'm well aware of that issue, so thank you.
Thank you. Senator Bjorkman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Simmons, through the chair, appreciate you joining us today. I appreciate the shout-out for my lumber bill, Senate Bill 87. I appreciate that. I was wondering if you could talk to us a little bit about strategic use of trust funds in kind of alleviating choke points for housing opportunities, and if you guys have a strategic plan or places identified to where you can alleviate some choke points. Do you have any of those?
Through the chair to Senator Bjorkman, we are relatively new. As I said, the board is just set up and we're in the process doing where we will focus our projects. And that's why we have a broad representation as not only the board, but the advisory council throughout the state. And Brian Butcher is an ex officio member on our board. And so hand in glove and also working with the housing association across the state, we'll have an idea of where those projects are. And those will be brought forward. So what we'll want to do is address those choke points or where we have the opportunity to push as many projects across the line as quickly as possible. So we want to be effective and efficient in that. What's advantage of our group is we don't have some of the federal, we don't have the federal requirements in terms of where we can make those decisions. So we'll try to use the best use of resources. Hopefully that answers your question.
Can I follow up?
Yes.
What are some examples that you guys have identified as choke points?
We have not got to that point yet. We're in the process of doing that literally right now through the chair.
Very good. One more.
Go ahead, Senator Bjorkman.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Simmons. So as I kind of look at, you know, ground that exists in the Kenai Peninsula borough, that the borough or other organization may like to dispose of for the express purpose of building housing, would HAP be interested in providing access to that ground so that the private market could then be incentivized to build homes on that ground, or are you guys actually more focused on building actual housing units?
Through the chair, we will look at any opportunities to do it. So when, for example, when we were talking with the governor, an idea he had was around donation of state land. Often utilities are very expensive in certain areas to connect to, so that's where we'll have to work with local municipalities and boroughs. That's a constraint in those areas. Also, if there's a way to, and there's land that's available to build, and we could facilitate that process either through grants or working with some of the other with the housing authorities, we would absolutely look at that.
Very good. And I think that those utility structures as well as roads to connect to land that's currently isolated could solve a lot of those choke points and open up a lot of land opportunity to build. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Simmons, do you have a look? You might have had another follow-up to that.
Okay. Good.
Okay, great. Okay, well, I'm not seeing any other questions. Thank you so much for your testimony.
Sir, once again, thank you so much.
Good luck with your work. All right. Something I should have mentioned when we were hearing SB 77, my intent is to set an amendment deadline for Wednesday, March 22nd. It's next week. And we have, as a reminder, we have existing amendment deadlines for SB 23 by Senator Gray Jackson. That will be Monday, March 20th. And SB 63 by Senator Kawasaki will also be Monday, March 20th. And so if you have amendments to any of those bills, please reach out to my office as soon as you can. The Senate Community Regional Affairs Committee will meet next Tuesday, March 21st, and my staff will be in touch with additional details. Are there any closing thoughts or comments? All right, not seeing any. Here we go. The time is 2:26 p.m., and this hearing of the Senate Community Regional Affairs Committee is now adjourned.